This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, Kathy Simard, who is a member of the Instructor Trainer Program faculty, we'll be here to discuss the importance of the consistency of aids. We'll also be hearing from the Senior Competition Coordinator here at the USDF, Kristen Brown, who will tell us about the All Breeds Awards. We also have part two of the series on rider biomechanics with Dr. Hilary Clayton. And later on, we'll be celebrating another American dressage legend in Lieutenant Colonel Hans Müller. And as always, we'd like to remind you that the views of the host and the guests of this podcast don't necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. But before we hear from our first guest this week, we would like to invite you to share your story on the road to the finals. Is qualifying for the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan one of your goals? Have you been to the finals before and are determined to return? Or perhaps you've never been to the US Dressage Finals but dream of qualifying this year. If so, we'd like to hear from you. In the coming months, the USDF will be featuring a series of stories leading up to this year's US Dressage Finals, and we're looking to follow the season-long journey of several riders from various regions. We want to share your experiences on the road to the finals with dressage fans from around the world. So if you're interested in participating, please email us at epubs@usdf.org. That's epubs@usdf.org. And the official prize list for the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan is now available. To get the most up-to-date information, please visit usdf.org/US Dressage Finals. And there's also a direct link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And now, Kathy Simard is here. She's an Instructor Trainer Program faculty member and L Education Program graduate with distinction. And she's going to explain the importance of the consistency of the aids. Kathy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Where would you like to start with this? It's a complex topic.
Well, over the past few weeks, I've really found myself mentioning the need to be consistent with my students. And it is complex, because there's so many places that we need to be consistent. We have to be consistent in our lines of travel. We have to have consistency in the warm-up at home and at a horse show. We need consistency in our correction and praise. But the one thing that I'd like to cover today is the consistency of the aids, and maybe we can cover some of those other topics at a later date. But with the consistency of the aids, I hope to give our riders some ways of being consistent and ways of recognizing they are being consistent. So when I talk about the aids, we're talking about the seat, the leg, and the rein. While we're being consistent with our seat, leg, and rein aids, we have to remember two things. The first is that horses learn patterns. And the second is that every time we are on their backs, we're teaching them something. So we really need to be steady and consistent in our aids to avoid any background noise to the horse in what we're trying to accomplish with our aids. So if we start with a seat aid, sometimes we have riders who are unsteady. They are wobbly, they're uneven, they might post to the front of the saddle on one stride and be in the back seat on the next stride. So that's a place where a rider would need to fix that to become consistent. And sometimes a horse can be uneven or unlevel when they are trotting. So they might be a young horse, or they may be a second level horse who's learning walk to canter. And every time you ask for the trot, they're thinking canter and you get unclear steps. Or maybe even a more advanced horse that is learning passage and seems to have forgotten how to just plain old trot anymore. So a good exercise for correcting this in both the unsteady rider and the unsteady horse is to focus on posting the trot consistently. So the rider needs to focus on rising and lowering into the saddle the same way every stride. So this means hips are even on every rise and sit. Hands and legs are steady with every step. The seat is landing in the center of the saddle every time, with an evenly weighted seat bone on each side of the horse's back. We're following the horse forward in an upward rise and controlling our own weight in the downward return to the saddle. So when doing this, the rider will notice that there is quite a bit amount of engagement required in their core to do it right and to be consistent with every step. But as the rider does this, the horse will respond with a consistent rhythm and tempo. Another place the rider might note the amount of core strength needed to be consistent is in their seat in the canter work. So as you are sitting or standing listening to this podcast, even out your seat, hips and feet under you. Now, if you slide one leg back along the floor, you're going to feel the weight shift to your other side. And this really is about the amount of weight you should shift into your inside seat bone when riding the canter. But many riders have the problem of taking this weight too far to the inside, causing a collapse. So when this rider is told to sit up more, to sit straight, or to shift their weight in the other direction, their horse will break into the trot. The reason for this is that to the horse, your consistent aid of sitting crooked has meant to canter, and that rider is probably consistently told the horse, when I sit up straight again, that's my trot aid. So to fix this, the first thing the rider needs to realize is that they've put this pattern in the horse, and the horse will continue to want to break every time that they're aware of themselves going out of balance, the rider leaving the center of the saddle, or somebody on the ground tells them that you are leaning off to the side. So when the rider goes to correct this and get a more centered, consistent seat, they might need to give their horse an extra little bump with a leg or maybe a vocal cue to keep cantering while they fix their seat and therefore change the pattern in the horse and can develop the correct, consistent pattern. So next, if we move on to the leg aids, we can also stay in the canter. And there are some riders who use a very active outside leg to maintain the canter. The correct aid is to add the jump or energy to the canter using our inside leg. But there is a very good exercise out there that calls for the rider to think about every stride in the canter being the first stride to maintain the gait with a lazier type horse. So in that exercise, the rider is asked to, maybe on four points of a circle, pretend you're asking again, and that will involve the outside leg. The problem occurs when this rider can't turn that leg off, and they're constantly bumping the horse. So, again, they've put that consistent pattern in the horse that for the canter, I'm going to kick you with my outside leg or both legs every stride. So this rider is now going to have a problem when they try to teach their horse the canter half pass, because the constant kick from the outside leg has meant to the horse go forward or faster. So he's going to be confused when the rider asks for something else with the outside leg. For example, in the half pass, move your haunches over. So this is going to take both the rider and the horse developing a new correct pattern for the half pass aids in the canter. So a good way I like to tell my riders to be aware of their leg aids is to be aware of when the lower part of your lower leg is on the horse. So I'm talking from the knee down. Riding with the ankles wrapped into the horse is not correct. So you want to think of your leg aids as a volume knob. And the lowest setting of that knob is when your leg is long and relaxed, with just the feeling of the leather of the calf portion of your boots touching the horse. And then in a consistent manner, you can turn that knob up or turn it down, depending on what you need. but we want to avoid anything that is constantly kicking or nagging at our horse. And the final aid we need to be consistent with is our rein aids. And even though they're last in our discussion, they're probably the most important for consistency because they're attached to our horse's mouth, which is very sensitive. So as you're listening to this, think of the area in front of your saddle at your horse's withers as a target or a bullseye. So you want to think that your hands can be as high as one fist above the center of the bullseye, as low and as wide as the top of your shoulders. So this is the place where when you give them a good scratch from the saddle, you can feel the top of the shoulder bones. And they can move maybe an inch or two forward to give a reward, but we never want to take them backward. So as you're listening this and you're picturing sitting on your horse, relax your arms and hold them in a riding position, picturing yourself in the saddle on your horse with your hands in the target zone. Now, if you turn your body to the left from your waist, you'll notice your right shoulder goes forward, which also brings your right hand more forward as you turned your shoulders. So when we turn our horses, our shoulders should follow the horse's shoulders and our hips should be aligned with their haunches. When the riders make the mistake of pushing the outside hand forward up the horse's neck, they will lose the outside shoulder in the turn. So to maintain consistency, think of the inside rein as a conversational rein and the outside rein as a rule maker. So the inside rein asks questions, and the outside rein sets boundaries. So the wonderful thing about horses is they're willing to let us train them and then also retrain them. So when we realize we have been doing something consistently wrong or not as correct as we could, our horses are willing to work with us as we correct it. So if we're consistent in using our aids clearly and correctly, our horses will respond to become easier for them to understand what we want, and we are all happier in the end with that.
That's very good advice, Kathy. Thank you very much indeed for that. We really appreciate you taking the time to come on the program and help us understand the consistency of the aids. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are very welcome.
Now, in our next segment, which we like to call Inside USDF, is our Senior Competition Coordinator, Kristen Brown, and she has information on the very popular All Breeds Awards program.
The All Breeds Awards are designed to recognize the accomplishments of specific breeds in dressage. Each year, more than 60 different breed registries take part in this program. If interested, you can find a list of the current All Breeds participating organizations and their contact information on the USDF website. In order for a horse to be eligible for the All Breeds Awards, the horse must be declared for the program. To declare your horse for the All Breeds Awards, all you have to do is submit a copy of your horse's breed registry papers and a completed All Breeds Awards declaration form to USDF. And remember, there is no fee to declare a horse for the All Breeds Awards, and the declaration stays in place for future competition years. The deadline to declare a horse for the All Breeds Awards is August 1st each year, and you may fax, mail, or email the documentation to USDF. If you miss the deadline, you can still declare a horse for the All Breeds Awards with payment of a late fee. The requirements for the All Breeds Awards are the same as the requirements listed in the USDF member guide for the other Adequan USDF year-end awards. So while you're competing this year and earning scores for the year-end awards, remember it may be possible to earn additional recognition through the All Breeds Awards program using those same scores. More information regarding the All Breeds Awards program is available on the USDF website and member guide, through the All Breeds Awards participating organizations, or you can email me directly at allbreeds@usdf.org.
And now, a regular contributor to this podcast, Dr. Hilary Clayton, who is a full-time researcher, is here to tell us about how the seat works. And this is the second part of the series on rider biomechanics, which was originally recorded at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
What our goal should be, just as people and especially as riders, is to be able to go around in what we call neutral spine. So whether you're standing, walking, sitting on a chair, or sitting on a horse, you should try to do that with your spine in this neutral position. How do you know if you're in neutral spine? Well, here's a way to sort of test. If you stand against a wall and your heels are maybe a couple of inches in front of the wall, and then you have your buttocks, the back of your shoulders, the back of your head just touching the wall, then that should put you pretty close to a neutral spine alignment. So you're going to be standing with a little bit of a hollow in your back, chest is lifted, and you pull your shoulder blades down and together. And then for your head, have your chin level, not up, not down, just level, nose pointing straight forward. And then sort of relax the muscles that you don't need to use to stand like that. Now, one of the differences between sitting in a chair and sitting on a horse is the position of our thigh. Of course, we don't want our thigh in a horizontal position like a jockey. We want our thigh, knee, and ankle stretched down long. But if we stretch our leg too long and open the hip too much, then it interferes with the curvatures in the spine. So you're not helping yourself as a dressage rider by riding with the stirrups too long. The other thing that we're often told is that we should be breathing deeply. Why would breathing deeply help us? Well, when you breathe deeply, you use the diaphragm as part of your breathing mechanism. And when you flatten the diaphragm down, then it increases the pressure inside your abdomen, and that helps to maintain your position. It helps the core muscles to actually stabilize and maintain your good posture. So there is a really good reason to breathe deeply, other than to avoid falling off because you're lack of oxygen or something. Now, pelvis is extremely important. Your pelvis is your direct connection to the horse. Your pelvis is what feels the movement of the horse, and it's what, very importantly, adapts to the movements of the horse so that the rest of your body can remain stable and still. Right? So the pelvis feels what the horse is doing. If you're an experienced rider, it anticipates the movement of the different gaits and allows you to keep your trunk and your shoulders and your head, and of course also your legs and arms, relatively still. And the pelvis is where your legs actually connect to the body. Your legs come up on each side and have a joint at the hip joint on both sides. And then your legs support the pelvis. The pelvis, in turn, supports your spine. So if you have somebody just sit on a pressure mat on top of a saddle, when a rider normally is just sitting in correct posture on the saddle, the contact points are the two seat bones. And the pubic bone at the front of the saddle is not normally in contact with the saddle. We did this study with Dr. Harman's pressure mat. She was one of the very first people to ever have a saddle pressure mat. And we put the mat on top of the saddle, and we just sat in different positions. We had half a dozen fairly experienced riders, and we had them sit straight, leaning back, slumping, leaning forward, and collapsing a hip. If the rider either leans back or rounds her back, then the back of the rider's buttocks is in contact with the saddle. And then if the rider leans way forward, then the pubic bone at the front will come into contact with the saddle, and there's less pressure on the seat bones there. So now we've got the pressure distributed over three points of contact. And one of the most important skills that you need to learn as a rider is to be able to move your pelvis. Your pelvis is able to rotate backwards and forwards, posteriorly and anteriorly. And you do that by using your core muscles. Just as we have that neutral position for the spine, we have a neutral position for the pelvis where it's vertical and the rider is balanced. Now, if we use our core muscles to rotate the pelvis forward, now we name the direction of pelvic rotation according to how the top part of the pelvis rotates. So if it rotates, it would be clockwise, the top of the pelvis is rotating forwards. Right, so we call that a forward or anterior pelvic tilt. If you do that, the effect it has is that it hollows your back. But the other thing that happens when you tilt your pelvis forward is that your seat bones slide backwards. And that's not an effective position for riding a horse in dressage. Now, the opposite thing, if you rotate the top of the pelvis backwards, so that's called a posterior or backward pelvic tilt, then the back becomes a little more rounded and your seat bones slide forward. So you can try that if you want, just sitting on your seat. Sit on your seat bones and rotate your pelvis forwards and backwards and feel what happens to your seat bones. So how do you actually tilt your pelvis? Which muscles do you use? Well, if you want to tilt it forward, you can either take the muscles that are attaching to the top of the pelvis at the back and contract those. So that would be your back muscles. And I often find that when people are tense or nervous about the horse they're riding, they'll contract those muscles and their butt sticks out. To me, that's often a good sign of tension in the rider. And the other thing that will cause this anterior pelvic tilt is to use the hip flexor muscles on the front, which can have two effects. They can, one effect, pull your femur up and close your hip joint, which we don't want, or they can pull your pelvis down towards the femur and give you that forward pelvic tilt. Now, some sports, it's normal to ride with a forward pelvic tilt. But as I say, it's not an effective position for dressage because we want to have our seat bones in a place where we can influence the horse to step underneath himself. So if we want to get this backward posterior pelvic tilt, which muscles are we going to use? Well, kind of the opposite antagonistic muscles to the ones that cause a forward tilt. So we can use our abdominal muscles, which attach to the pubic bone, for example, the rectus abdominis muscle. And if you tighten that muscle, your six-pack muscle, it'll tilt the front of your pelvis up and pull your seat bones forward. And then, with your pelvis in that position, you can actually use your gluteal muscles and the hamstrings that are going down the back of your leg. With your pelvis tilted, if you contract the hamstrings, it'll actually pull your thigh back and help to hold the pelvis in that tilted position.
And our thanks again to Dr. Hilary Clayton for her contributions to our education segment here as part of our series on rider biomechanics. And now, in our American Dressage Legends series, we're going to take a closer look at the life and career of Lieutenant Colonel Hans Müller.
Lieutenant Colonel Hans Müller was inducted into the Rümer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 2000 in recognition of his seminal contributions to training of dressage judges and instruction of riders in the United States. He organized the first Dressage Judges Forum and started the first program for systematic judge training in America. Lieutenant Colonel Müller conducted clinics for riders throughout the U.S. and was a leading judge at selection trials and national championships. Born in a suburb of Vienna to a non-horsey family, Hans Müller entered the military after high school and ended up in the horse-drawn artillery. From 1936 to 1938, he attended the Austrian Army's Institute for Riding Instructors near Vienna. There, he became good friends with Hans Handler, a future director of the Spanish Riding School. When Nazi Germany took over Austria during World War II, all Austrian military officers were made members of the German Army. As such, Müller spent time in France and then on the Russian front, and later was captured by US troops and sent to the States as a prisoner of war. He was released when the war ended and returned home to Austria in 1946. After the war, Müller worked for the provincial government with the Marshall Plan. In 1952, he married Joan, a student at the Spanish Riding School. The couple moved to the Chicago area, where Mueller went to work for an advertising agency. But soon the lure of horses and riding beckoned, and he accepted a position in Oregon at Mills College Stables. Eventually, Mueller and his wife moved to California, where they first settled at John Galvin's Rancho San Fernando Rey in the San Ynez Valley, and then in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mueller became interested in the education of young riders, and would go on to be a major supporter of the United States Pony Clubs. He also taught and coached several promising U.S. dressage riders. Under his tutelage, John Galvin's daughter Patricia won America's first international dressage gold medal at the 1959 Pan American Games, and fellow Californian Kyra Downton competed in the 1968 Olympics. He also coached a number of event riders in the 1960s. Another of Mueller's interests was the fledgling American Dressage Institute, a dressage training center headquartered in Saratoga Springs, New York. He was one of the ADI's earliest clinicians, and he helped to bring fellow dressage masters Hans Handler, Gustav Niblaus, and Bengt Lundquist to the United States. Also, as a respected judge, Mueller officiated at many U.S. dressage championships and selection trials. In fact, one of his most significant areas of contribution to U.S. dressage was in the area of judge education. A guiding light of the California Dressage Society, who served as a professional advisor from the organization's inception until 1986, Mueller helped to develop CDS's Judge Education Program and the first formal dressage judges forums. His curriculum, incorporating substantial theoretical instruction, was so successful that today it is an element of the USDF L Education Program for judge training.
And finally, we have a reminder that the deadline for entries in the 2017 USDF Arts Contest is July the 1st. This annual contest was designed to highlight the creativity and beauty of dressage and to allow USDF members to express their interest in the sport outside of the competition arena. Winners will have their work published in the yearbook issue of USDF Connection, with the grand prize winner used as the cover of the USDF member guide. And all submissions must be the work of a current USDF member. You can find more information by visiting the USDF website at usdf.org or by following the link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And that's it for this week's podcast. Don't forget that you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast or to any podcast app, so you can listen to the show anywhere. And to find out when the latest episode of this podcast is available, be sure to check our Facebook page. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.